to the Batmobile. Let's go.
Come on, bub, for old time's sake, huh?
Harley Quinn, nice to meet ya.
Pardon my French. Fuck those fuckers.
This is my favorite Marvel character ever, but you should never meet your heroes, because honestly, he's a bit of a dick.
Now might be a really good time for you to get angry.
That's my secret, Cap.
I am inevitable.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Comics in Motion podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, and my co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to Comics in Motion TV and movie reviews for shows that are based on comic books. Myself, I'll be reviewing from the perspective of a long-time comic book reader.
And I'll be reviewing from the TV and movie perspective.
And what we also like to do is we also like to spoil the hell out of everything we review. And so if you haven't watched our choice of the week, we'd advise you to proceed with caution. And remember, Chris, with an average podcast comes no responsibility. Now, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, there's been a little bit of simmering from me. This is my pick because it has just all been released on Netflix, guys. So every single Spider-Man movie pretty much is on Netflix now. So you've got no excuse. And I've always championed Andrew Garfield. I think he's one of the best Spider-Man, definitely Peter Parker, in my opinion, even though I love Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire. So I thought, you know what? Let's put my theory to the test. Not seen the film for about 4 or 5 years, but there's a few tidbits I always go back to on YouTube. So we're going to review today, Dave, the 2012 The Amazing Spider-Man. So, did you see this in the cinema, Dave?
Spider-Man, Chris. Of course I did. I mean, I remember at the time, though, thinking, crikey, it's a bit quick for a reboot. You know, it felt like we'd only recently really had the Spider-Man 3, you know, the conclusion to the Tobey Maguire, Sam Raimi Spider-Man. And so it seemed a little bit premature to go back to the beginning again. So I wasn't that massively bought into it. But of course, as soon as the trailer comes out, it's like, yep, going to go and watch that. And to be honest, I quite enjoyed it at the time, I think. You saw, especially if you compare to the original 2002 Spider-Man, you know, the CGI had come a long way. You know, he sort of looked a bit rubbery and a bit fake, didn't he? The old CGI, yeah, when he's swinging along. Whereas I thought this movie just took a massive step up and looked fantastic on the big screen, I have to say. I mean, what about yourself, Chris?
Yeah, I do remember going to the cinema to watch this, Dave, 100%. And I remember really, really enjoying it. And I did think, like you, it was a step up from the Tobey Maguire years. Mainly, it's 10 years on. We were in the midst of the creation of the Avengers as well, weren't we? We wanted that crossover. Was he going to be part of this crossover? Obviously, he wasn't in the end, Andrew Garfield. He did two movies and there's no correlation or link to the MCU because it's a Sony picture. But I did, I really enjoyed it, and I'd always liked him. Didn't realise he was English at the time. I thought his awkwardness. And I think what dragged me in was watching that Comic Con on YouTube where he dressed up in like this proper shitty Spider-Man outfit and asks like the panel about the movie. And then all of a sudden he pulls his mask off and it's him talking and the crowd are going crazy because he loves Spider-Man. I've watched stuff recently where they're saying like, are you in the new one, you know, No Way Home, are you in it? And he's like, no. And some are saying it's a Pinocchio job and others are saying that he isn't. Now, we've seen Doc Ock. Have they kept it quiet? I don't know. Really interesting. But I have championed Andrew Garfield. I've even said I'd go on Comics on Trial against someone and say he's the best Peter Parker for me. But it was interesting going back, Dave, I've got to say. So, yeah, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm always, like I say, I'm always picking tidbits up from YouTube. I think there's a couple of proper iconic moments in this movie. But again, this is nearly 10 years old, Dave. So this is the other way of like Tobey Maguire. So we've got Tom Holland. I'm going to be really interested to see what you think of the comparison.
I mean, I could tell you right now if you want. I mean, I don't think he's... if I was to rate them, I would say Tom Holland, then I'd have Tobey Maguire, then Andrew Garfield last. I just feel like he's a bit too tall. He's a bit too dashing. You know, I'm not buying for a second that he's this awkward, geeky little kid. And I think I'd seen him as well in The Social Network. I think that was... Yes. I know he'd done a few things before, but that was the first thing I'd seen him in, like just before this, pretty much. So, yeah, I don't think he's bad by any stretch. But in terms of how I'd rate the Spider-Man, that's how I'd go. I mean, Andrew Garfield's your top, but where would you rate the other two?
Well, Dave, he was my top with my rose-tinted glasses.
Oh,
however,
controversial.
Controversial. I'm not even into the trailer, but I think Tom Holland is the best one. And then I think Andrew Garfield's Peter Parker is the best of the three. However, as Spider-Man and as a complete package, Tom Holland is the best. And then I would probably say Andrew Garfield, then Tobey Maguire. And I think the Tobey Maguire one's subjective because of the age thing, Dave, because obviously the third one is absolutely ridiculous. And we did the second Tobey Maguire Spider-Man a couple of months ago, and it was great, a great movie still. So it's subjective. However, I know the second one isn't great. And yeah, I don't want to say too much, Dave, but there may be a Chris Phelps full 180 going down on this. I've got to be honest with you.
I'm trying to rack my brains now. It's one of our first Comics of Motion episodes. Didn't you say, like, Jack Nicholson was the best Joker or something like that?
I did, Dave. Why have you got such a good memory? Why have you got such a good memory? And then we did The Dark Knight, which I put to Atlantis, actually, The Dark Knight. Yeah, and even now I'm thinking, what are you doing? But because I always think that The Dark Knight, Returns is the best one. But I think I could have been wrong there, Dave. Obviously, time is a healer.
Yeah. You said afterwards, I'm sure it was a few episodes after, you said, oh, I just got a bit giddy there.
Yeah, I did. It may be the same for this, Dave, but there you go.
I tell you, you say about the second one, and I do think, the kind of poor performance, certainly at the box office of that, helped along, these talks with Marvel, and that's when we ended up getting Spider-Man introduced into the MCU via kind of Captain America Civil War. My son loves the second one. I don't know why. It's not one of my favorites. I think there are some good moments in it, but I was actually going to say, my son reckoned that my son's with you, or was with what you previously thought. He thinks Andrew Garfield's the best as well.
Interesting, Dave. Interesting. So shall we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
You're going to stay with your aunt and uncle for a little while. You'll be safe here.
Where are you going?
Something your mom and I have to do.
I want to go with you.
Yeah, we have to go.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really. Peter lives with his aunt and uncle.
I forgot all about that thing. It was your dad's.
What are you doing here?
I'm nothing.
Do not get me in trouble. Don't touch anything.
We all have secrets. The ones we keep. And the ones that are kept from us.
A young Peter Parker discovers that his father, Richard Parker's study, has been burglarized. Peter's parents gather hidden documents, take Peter to the home of his Aunt May and Uncle Ben, and then mysteriously depart. Years later, a teenage Peter attends Midtown Science High School, where he is bullied by Flash Thompson and has caught the eye of Gwen Stacy. At home, Peter finds his father's papers and learns his father worked with fellow scientist Dr. Kirk Connors at Oscorp in the field of cross-species genetics. Sneaking into Oscorp, Peter enters a lab where a biocable is under development from a genetically modified spider, or multiple spiders, one of which bites him. He later discovers he has developed spider-like abilities such as super strength, sharp senses, reflexes, agility, and speed. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, I've got to say, a little bit of the Bruce Wayne fatigue, Dave. You know, the whole, let's tell the story of how Bruce Wayne's parents died in multiple films. You can only tell it so many ways. Now, I went into this all guns blazing, thinking I'm sending it to the top. I thought this is a great film, rose-tinted glasses. And watching it now, I still stand by Andrew Gower. I think he's great. I say I think he's probably my second favourite now. He has been demoted. I think his awkwardness of his character is good. But I do think I agree with you, actually. He was about 26, 27 when he did this. Andrew Garfield's about 3 years younger than me, Dave. He was on a show recently. He's about 38, 39. So it's like, that never works. Tom Holland was late teens, early, you know, very early 20s. He still looks young, doesn't he?
Beverly Hills 90210, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Fucking Jason Priestley's 35, but he's still 17 in the show. that Steve's got a receding hairline and everything, Dave, but he's still at fucking school. Okay, mate. I went into it thinking, great. I felt really fatigued watching this. It just felt like watching Batman. I was like, how many times are we going to get the story of the spider biting you? You know, the same. I know that's Spider-Man's origin story. I know it. We don't need it. And I will say, watching it this time, I like, obviously, Sally Field for me, one of the best, because she's in Smoking the Bandit. She's frogging it. You know, Burt Reynolds' his love interest. I don't think her and Martin Sheen are very good in this, Dave. Especially Martin Sheen. I think he's pretty poor in it as Uncle Ben. And I think when you're watching the Tobey Maguire one, I think that hits home harder when, obviously, Uncle Ben gets killed off. And I think watching it now, and you've got Kirk Connors. I mean, what's he called? The fucking Welsh guy. What's he called?
Reese Iffens.
Yeah. I don't think he's very good either. And watching it, even though it's got all the beats of Spider-Man and it's in New York and we've got this whole thing, you know, I love New York. And honestly, just before we're recording, this is a complete coincidence. I'm going through Miles Morales on the PS5 again because I'm at the point where I've got my last trophy to get a platinum, Dave. So I finally cracked that game. Just started playing it in the last hour, and it's just so random that I'm playing it as we're recording. But I don't think this is a good movie now, you know. Like 9-10 years down the line, I think it's very cumbersome. And I wasn't bought in like I thought I was years ago. I don't know why I rated it so highly. I think there's some great scenes with Flash Thompson when he's doing the basketball and everything. I love all them scenes. I'll always watch. They're the ones I was saying earlier on YouTube and things like that. But I just don't think it works. And Gwen, from nowhere, just wants to literally rip his clothes off from nothing. And obviously, Dennis Leary's his dad, her dad. We don't see him till about halfway through the movie. But yeah, I just think it's quite cumbersome. And the whole fact that, you know, what's he called? Connors. Kirk Connors doesn't know who Peter Parker is and hasn't kept an eye on him all these years, even though it was his best friend's son and everything. I don't buy any of that. I don't know. It just felt really laboured and quite boring in parts because it's on for 2 hours, 15 minutes. I mean, what did you think of that, Dave?
Well, I fell asleep in it, to be honest. I mean, that sort of gives you the answer straight away. I completely agree about retelling the origin story. And again, I think that's what the MCU's done quite well. You know, they just introduced him as part of Captain America, but then they didn't take the easy way out. They didn't go back and make Coming Home an origin story. It's just like they've they picked him up, and he's got powers, and he's just trying to figure out, you know, how to navigate life and everything. But it's not the retelling of exactly the same story. And it felt to me like, with the whole bloody BioCable thing, it felt to me like they were just trying to tweak it just enough to be different from the Tobey Maguire origin. So it's it's not the same, is it? You know, because there, when he was bitten by a radioactive spider, he was there on a school trip kind of thing. And it wasn't enough. I think I thought it was interesting what they tried to do with his parents, you know, and create that little bit of mystery and intrigue about, well, what's going on there, you know, and trying to explain why he's with his Aunt May and Uncle Ben initially. I mean, you say Martin Sheen, Chris. Of course, that is Raymond Antonio Geraldo Estevez.
Estevez, yes.
You know, so I think he was just there for a payday, to be honest. He was sort of sleepwalking through it, wasn't he? But yeah, I think Andrew Garfield's good enough. Like I say, Gwen got the eyes for him straight away. I want Peter to be a little bit less cool, you know, a bit less, you know, like all the ladies are just going to fall for him. He needs to work hard at it, you know, and so I don't know. I think for that, I wasn't necessarily bought into him. That said, I think the effects, as I mentioned or alluded to before, are so much better. You know, when you get Peter, when you get him in the suit and everything, and he's swinging through, the way the material kind of moves in the wind and stuff, I think it just looks great. I think the suit, I thought that in the Raimi trilogy, I thought the suit looked good, but in this one, it's, you know, they've tweaked it and it still looks great, you know. So, I think I enjoy it. It's just, I agree, retelling the origin story is a mistake. Who in the world, you know, doesn't know that Peter Parker got bit by a radioactive spider?
Exactly.
It doesn't need to be retold, does it? It's just, you know it.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that, Dave. And I think what I struggle with as well is there's a hell of a leap from him being bitten. He obviously wakes up. Rex is en suite bathroom, you know, like a bit like the Tobey Maguire one. He wrecks the tap and everything, and he's pulling the door handles. Wolverine Origins, yeah, with the Harley Davidson, that one. There's a little nod there, but he goes after these people because he's seen, like, obviously when Uncle Ben gets killed, one of them's got this tattoo on his wrist, so he goes like sort of vigilante looking for these guys. He's fighting them, running up and down the buildings, but then the leap from him being just a nobody with his face to getting a mask is he falls in a Lucha Libre wrestling ring through a ceiling, sees a mask, and then literally within 2 or 3 minutes, he's got a full Spider-Man suit. You know, it's like there's a leap there that I'd never realised before. Yeah, there's a bit of explanation how he gets the suit, but it's not enough for me for it to be like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. He was drawing, wasn't he? Constantly drawing.
Yeah, yeah.
You look at the way they do it in the MCU is clever because he's already Spider-Man. Tony Stark goes, "You're Spider-Man, aren't you?" And he's got that shit suit. And then he starts making him suits. That's more plausible in the MCU because you're like, well, he's making him sort of super suits as well. You know, the bulletproof Kevlar suits, all this stuff. Obviously, he can go into space in one of them and that. So that made more sense. I just couldn't work out how all of a sudden this Peter Parker is a tremendous machinist, Dave, and has the full suit, because he's a bit where Aunt May says, "I want some eggs," and obviously he goes then tracking some criminals down and forgets the eggs, and she obviously knows, you know, who he is, but and he's getting it. I don't know. It just fell off this time, and I'm gutted really, because I genuinely thought I'd be absolutely cooing over it and really laying into you, going, "He's fucking great," and you'd be like, "No, he wasn't," and I'm not. I can't. I found it quite boring. I'm going to watch the second one this week. I am going to watch it, but I found it really boring this time. And other than the few set pieces, I don't think it tells a good story. I mean, Kurt Connors just goes from a really nice guy with no arm to an absolute psycho, and the fact that the convenience of the plot that Gwen works there and has access to his lab, Dave, I mean, come on, that is plot armor and the plot device. It's one of the best you're going to see. However, The girl who plays Gwyn is absolutely stunning.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is it Emma? Oh, Stone?
Yeah. Yeah, she's beautiful.
Very good looking lady, isn't she? And, you know, Peter, like I say, he's, obviously, you know, in the comics, he was going out with Gwen Stacy, and then, you know, we know what happened in the second movie, and that obviously happened in the comics as well. But it does all happen a little bit too quickly, doesn't it? And, you know, Peter's, you know, meeting the parents, isn't he? And old Captain Stacy there doesn't like the new vigilante. So you can see there's a bit of conflict there. But, yeah, it's just a bit dull, really, isn't it? And you've got this kind of side plot. So the villain of the piece, Kirk Connors, like I say, this is, you know, pretty much taken from his comic book origins, but, you know, where he basically, Kirk Connors is the Lizard. And they kind of redesigned him. And I think he doesn't look like he does in the comics, but I kind of like what they did with him, because it sort of looked so imposing next to Spider-Man.
Yes.
You know, he just looked like this big, muscly brute. And that, you know, Spider-Man basically, you wouldn't have thought would have a chance against him. And, you know, one of the things that makes Spider-Man who he is not just all about his powers. It's the fact that, you know, he just never gives up. And when he should, like, walk away, you know, he's got this almost like Catholic guilt, you know, not quite Daredevil-like, but, you know, he's got this thing about great power comes great responsibility. So I liked what they did with the Lizard, because I don't think the way he's drawn in the comics and stuff, and I don't know if you'd have seen from like the 90s cartoons, he looks more like a crocodile kind of thing.
He does. So, he does. Yeah. He always had the lab coat on in the 1960s Spider-Man. And I sent you a thing, didn't I? That's on Disney Plus, the Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man and his friends and all that. And I remember him then. You're right. He looks like a crocodile, Dave. He doesn't look like a lizard. I will say, that again, great scene when he's at the school, you know, when he's going around the school. I think it's brilliant. And obviously, he comes to Peter's fighting him. I think that's a great action scene. There's some really, really good set pieces in this movie that are brilliant. I think the action's really good. But I think the whole story, I don't think Dennis Leary's great as the captain. He's like, I'm not interested in him. You know, you're after my daughter. I don't like him. It's the typical trope, in it, you know, the dad who hates, protective dad who hates the daughter's boyfriend and that. We've seen it all before. Obviously, eventually, they become, you know, allies or such. But yeah, I think it works pretty well. I just find it really ridiculous, because Gwyn literally is this high school, sort of got a part-time job in this laboratory, but she's fucking tough as fuck. Now, obviously, her dad's a cop. It could be said, well, she's played like that because she's been brought up, you know, school of hard knocks and that. But it is a stretch. But I do like what you said about when his arm generates and everything and he becomes the lizard and his scaly. There is some great effects. I'm totally agree, because one of the things that stood out when we did the 2002 Spider-Man and the second one of Alpha Molina, you're so right, is the swinging. It looks like a computer game. It looks like a plasticine character or something when it just looks so detached from what a real person would be doing it. And I think they've got it right on this. The mechanics of this character is brilliant. It's just the delivery of the story is just quite boring, and it feels too familiar to me, Dave. This film feels like what? So for me, Lizard, you know, the Lizard would be sort of a character in these sort of movies who's, he fights him at the start, he fights him halfway through, but there's a bigger bad. He doesn't feel an awesome enough nemesis for me for Spider-Man. You know, like when you watch the Tobey Maguire one, and you've got the Green Goblin and all that, they feel like, you know, he's in adversity. I never felt that Spider-Man was under the cosh sort of thing.
Yeah, and I guess they had a trilogy in mind, clearly, didn't they? You know, they set up this intrigue with his parents, and so that doesn't pay off in this movie. So they're making it with a view to the trilogy. Whereas I do think quite often, you know, you just need to stick the landing on the first movie. I mean, It did all right at the box office. You know, it was made for somewhere between 200, 230 million and made nearly 800 million. So it did all right at the box office. But Chris, it's fucking Spider-Man. It's always going to do well at the box office.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, probably how dull and ponderous, you know, the movie just plods along, really, doesn't it, for me? I think that probably resulted in the second one, you know, not doing very well at the box office as well.
Yeah, and I think one thing I did miss at the start, Dave, the whole situation with his parents and that, there's two movies come to mind when I watched it this time, and you can forgive me and say bullshit. One of them's Harry Potter, the way his parents disappear, and Harry Potter's always looking for his parents, but obviously, you know, they try and save him with Voldemort, and you know, if you never watched Harry Potter, don't want to ruin it, but Professor Snape is the bad most of the time through it, but he isn't. But then you've also got a Star Wars feel to it as well. It almost feels like when Luke and Leia are split up, and obviously he ends up with his aunt and uncle, you know, and I don't know, Dave, I know this is the origin, but because I've never seen this with his parents, there's never been a mention of it, really. They just said, like, the parents usually died in a car crash years earlier or whatever. There's a bit of meat on the bones. It just felt like they were ripping off their movies. I could be wrong. It could be something that's been in the bloody comic books for years. I obviously don't know. I know you might know better, but it felt like I'd seen this before.
Yeah, I don't think... I think his parents, I think that whole thing has been explored, but I don't think it's massive in the comics. I couldn't tell you exactly what happens. I just think it's one of those things, no one cares.
Yeah.
No one cares. He's just, since his origin, you know, in Amazing Fantasy, he's just been with his Uncle Ben and Aunt May, and that was just the way it was. And I think that used to happen a lot more, didn't it? For one reason or another, you know, kids being brought up by, you know, uncles and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, look, I'm not saying it's not something people can not relate to, because you can. You're totally right. A lot of kids grew up with the grandparents, Dave, didn't they? So I was literally at my grandparents all the time, both sides, as a kid.
Mm.
I never wanted to be at home. So I get it. I totally get it. I was literally brought up by my grandparents in my teens. So I totally understand all that. It's relatable to me. It just feels too samey. And I think, and it's terrible to do this, because I really, really wanted this to be something, a proper sleeper for me. Like, oh, he's amazing. Amazing Spider-Man, Dave. Terrible pun. But I did, and it just didn't hit. And again, as the movie goes on, you know, one of the scenes that I thought was brilliant. So when he's fighting against the lizard, they go underground, they go up the ground, and he gets a good kick in. And obviously, he ends up getting shot, doesn't he? Because, you know, George, the captain, Gwyn's dad, he realises that he's not a dickhead. He is a good guy. One of the cops shoots him. He goes, and then we've got the scene with the cranes. Now, that is actually replicated in the game, the 2018 PS4 game, which I've only just started playing this last year. You know, I always rave about it. I've just completed it again for the bloody third or fourth time. I love the game so much because they remastered it for the PS5. There's a scene in that where he has to hit the cranes, and it's like, I get that reference straight away. And I love that scene. That does give me a bit of a lump in the throat. It's like everyone knows that Spider-Man is the man. And I do think at the end of the second one with Rhino, he's brilliant, where the kid goes to face off with Rhino and Spider-Man's done a bit like what happened with Tobey Maguire when he gave up his, you know, the suit and that, and I've lost all my senses and that, and he's like, his bottle's gone. But then he turns up at the end and everyone's like, Spider-Man, even though everyone's behind barriers as this massive 20-foot guy in a Rhino suit, he's there as if they're like, they're watching some sort of football game, but they're all not bothered about it. But it's a good, there's some good set pieces, and I think that is a great scene. And one of the scenes on the bridge is good as well, because again, the Miles Morales game, Dave, that actually shows there's a great scene in that game on the bridge. I don't think it's the Brooklyn Bridge, but it's one of the other bridges, and it's brilliant. The bridge basically collapses, and so it's all relatable stuff that I should like. But I just think, other than them sequences, I mean, Gwen creates the antidote, Dave. Who the fuck is she? She's 17 years old at school, and she's a fucking master chemist scientist. I'm not buying it that she's done a bit of Bunsen burner work and everything, and all of a sudden she's this mastermind. I'm not having it at all.
Well, I think the problem is, well, there's lots of problems in that. Like you say, this film came out 10 years after the first one. You know, the 2002, and then the second one came out 2012. So the whole Raimi trilogy is fresh in your mind. And then they've decided to retread the whole origin. And I just think that's a mistake. So it automatically, you know, it sends you off to sleep. You've seen this before. And, you know, it's trying to put its own little spin on it, but it's not enough. But there's lots of things in this movie that are quite Silver Age, you know. And so in the Silver Age of comics, the storylines are a bit silly. And yeah. And Chris, we mention it in pretty much every episode of the VHS Strikes Back, so we might as well mention it here as well. No Retreat, No Surrender. The whole strategy of the mob is to take over all the dojos in America.
Yeah.
So that they can collect their subs and get a few quid. Absolute nonsense. Just a silly motivation that would never happen anywhere in the real world. And here you've got Kirk Connors. He wants to turn everyone into a lizard. And it's like, it's so one-dimensional. It's such a mustache-twirling villain thing to do. And like you say, the fact that, you know, someone in our primary cast, so Gwen Stacy, just happens to have the knowledge to be able to put together a fucking antidote for this thing. It's just nonsense, isn't it? And so I guess for that reason, I should like it. But because it's trying to be so serious and so gritty as well, I think it loses it. It's not sure, is it trying to be silly or is it trying to be gritty and realistic?
Yeah. I'm with you on that. And it's funny you mentioned, because I don't know that reference with the Silver Age or anything, but I think this, it's strange because they're obviously trying to compete with what the MCU is creating. Obviously, we'd had Avengers, we'd had Thor, we had a couple of Iron Man movies, hadn't we, at this point? You know, and we know, obviously, what happens from there. I don't know. It feels like a massive production, which it is, but it's just off and it's a shame. And I like to say, he's still good, Andrew Garfield. I think despite the writing and some of the plot, I still think he's a good Spider-Man and he's definitely a good Peter Parker. It's just a shame he was let down, Dave. It's almost like the Ben Affleck for me with Andrew Garfield. You know, like obviously I've slated Affleck completely, but then when you actually watch him in the Justice League and that, the proper version, he was a lot better as Batman. You know, I still go, I live and die by Christian Bale, definitely. But I can get why everyone says it. It's more of a comic book Batman than anything we've seen. You know, he's this troubled guy. He's an older guy fighting his demons. He's you know, he's not out of shape, but he's just battered from all the wars and that. And I think he does a better job than what we see in the Dark Knight Rises, when obviously he comes out of retirement after 8 years, gets a kick in, and then, you know, the whole Rocky comeback thing when he does his back in. But I think with this, it's probably that as well. He's a good character. For me, he's a good character in a pretty poor movie. And I think that's probably my best description of this, to be honest.
He is good. And like you say, there's a lot to like, I think, about Andrew Garfield. And it's the film around him that lets him down, I think. You know, Chris, when he got the suit and he put it on for the first time, he started crying. I think that makes me, I'm laughing, but I mean, it makes me happy laughing. I'm not taking the piss out of him. I think, can you imagine just the joy? You know, he's been acting all of his adult life and he's landed this role for this absolute iconic character. And he was going around sort of during shooting and stuff. He'd have his breaks and he'd go around New York and play basketball with the kids with his Spider-Man suit on.
That's brilliant.
I just think it's fucking brilliant.
And I think that's what it's about. Tom Holland's done it as well, and he's gone to hospitals dressed as him, and people are like, or he's been at Spider-Man conventions and they're all outside doing Spider-Man, and then he takes his mask off, and they've done it at the Universal Studios and stuff. At Disney. And he's been there with a load of people on these days out, and it's actually him. He's doing all the free running and everything, and then he takes his mask off. There's some great videos. I'm with you on it. Completely with you on it. And he was a massive comic book fan, so he's relatable. I love his awkwardness as Peter Parker. I love the dialogue. I love the thingy. But you're right. I think when he's with Flash, he looks small, but everyone else, he looks tall. They're obviously doing a little bit of camera trickery. He must be about 6'1", Dave. He's a tall lad, and he's a bit the Hugh Jackman's about him with Wolverine. He's not 5'7", 5'8", which is what Spider-Man should be. He's a taller lad, to be fair. And I don't necessarily think it works all the time.
Yeah, I agree. But I would say one thing I do really like from this is they went back to the mechanical web shooters. So obviously in the Raimi trilogy, you know, it just Tobey Maguire can shoot webs out of his wrists, can't he? Just they come with his powers. Whereas I like the fact that he's, you know, Peter Parker is really smart as well. And, you know, he has to build his web shooters there. So again, you know, you're stretching, would this happen in real life? But he is supposed to be a really smart kid. So, you know, I think I can forgive that one. And I do really like that.
No, it's really good. And I think as we come towards the end of it all, you know, we have the big showdown, don't we, on the building, and everyone's like, we've got this lizard. You know, her dad, Captain Stacy's only said to the mayor, there's no lizard dinosaur running around Manhattan. And there he is on the camera. He then goes John Rambo, and him and Peter are together, you know, Spider-Man and stuff. And he knows, he basically finds out that, you know, Spider-Man is Peter. And he's like, you know, I've got him. And as soon as he says, you know, to Spider-Man, I've got the lizard, you know full well what's coming, Dave. He's like, getting fucking toasted, mate. You are getting absolutely taken out. Does his bit of Rambo, John Matrix, and then obviously, you know, lizard takes him out and kills him. And then he chases Peter. And I think that as a spectacle's great. I think the ending's good. The fighting's really good. There is a bit of, like, you know, is he going to save him? We know obviously he will, but he's like, is he going to do anything? And then eventually with the antidote, he sort of comes to his senses, don't he, Connors, then? He's sort of like, he's got this split personality, very similar to the Green Goblin, Dave, Norman Osborn. Mm. You know, he's got that the good guy, bad guy inside him, the devil and the angel on his shoulder. So that's really good. And I think the way it all comes together and it saves people who are obviously going, you know, look like the turning into a lizard and the face and that. Some of the effects are really clever on it. It's just, I just think you've got that, you've always got that thing with Peter where he has a pretty shit life, Dave, no matter what, where you're reading it, whether it's in the comics, computer games, films, he's always troubled, isn't he? He's always, you know, Tobey Maguire, I think, did a great job in Spider-Man 2 where it was like he was trying to protect everyone, but he couldn't protect himself, and it just became too much and lost his powers, sort of thing. And this works, but you've got, again, Captain Stacy, don't go near my daughter, don't go near her, you know, stay away from her. And it's like, oh, here we go again, you know, like, can't he just be happy, you know? There's no Mary Jane in these films, you know, so that's an interesting take. And obviously there is Spider-Gwen, isn't there, Dave? So whether they were going to introduce her in the third one that never got made, I don't know.
No, I mean, she only got introduced into the comics in recent years, Spider-Gwen, and she's Gwen Stacy from a parallel universe as well. So the actual Gwen Stacy from the comics, so she was before Mary Jane, she did get killed off, and again Peter blamed himself, you know, the Goblin threw her off, and you know, it was the same as how it unfolded in the second movie, to be honest. You know, Peter saved her, but he ended up snapping her neck. Really iconic moment in the comics, because it's like, again, that was, some people say that's coming out of the Silver Age. That was kind of the death of the Silver Age. Things started to get, you know, quite gritty around that time, a bit more realistic and stuff. But I don't know. I thought the fight on the top of the building was good. Great effects, you know, and I'd imagine, I didn't watch this in 3D obviously, but I'd imagine if it was, you know, popping out the screen, it'd look pretty good as well. So yeah, I think it looks great. But you're right, I think it's just the story, really, isn't it? And the thing is, the ending of this does piss me off a little bit, because obviously Peter has to you know, he has to promise to Captain Stacy, because Captain Stacy, you know, he's a bit of a hypocrite, isn't he? You know, it's all right for him to be in the line of fire as a copper, but, you know, he knows he doesn't want his daughter going out with someone like Spider-Man, because he knows that, you know, it'll put her in danger. So he makes Peter promise, you know, he's not going to see her. And then so Peter, you know, avoids going to Gwen's dad's funeral. So he avoids her, you know, all the time. And then, you know, she even confronts him. And a great bit of acting, I have to say, by the pair of them, I thought. Did you know they actually started dating in this production? Oh, did they? Chris? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good chemistry. I can believe that.
Definitely, definitely. Good luck to him. But then he does all of that. And then right at the end, you know, we get this thing in, you know, he walks into a lecture late, like he's not asked. You know, he just walks straight past the teacher, doesn't say anything. But then when he sits down, he's like, oh, sorry, miss, or whatever. And then she talks about don't make promises that you can't keep. And then he sort of whispers to Gwen, he says, but those are the best kind. I'm like, now you choose your moment? You've avoided the fucking funeral. You fucking ghosted her, you know, and now you just decide, you know what, it's all right. He's cold in the ground now. We can fuck him over. You know, I just thought it was a bit inconsistent, and just I would have preferred to not have that moment and to just be like, at the end of the movie, they're not together.
Yeah.
And then at the start of the next movie, okay, they kind of reconcile and what have you. But it just annoys me because we went through that whole fucking period where he's avoiding her. And then at the end, he's just like, yeah, it's all right. We'll break the promise.
Yeah, and I do, I think, just circling back slightly when you said about a dad, I love the fact that Gwen says to her dad, you know, it would say something like, yeah, look after him. It's like, he's Spider-Man who can fucking pick cars up. He can fucking jump hundreds of feet in the air. And you're asking some fucking middle-aged cop to fucking save him. I don't necessarily think you've got your priorities right there, Gwen. I think it should be you asking Peter to keep your fucking dad safe, let alone. Yeah. So, yeah, that was the only bit this time where I was pissing myself thinking, I think you've got the wrong fucking script there, Quinn. It should have been Peter you having this conversation with. But no, I think it ends as it does. And I agree, it's a nonsense bit, that, with them two. But then we do get a mid-credit scene as well, don't we, Dave? So we've got Connors in jail. Some guy randomly gets into his prison cell. It's all dark. He's got a little hat. I don't know who that's supposed to be. And he's like, do you know about his... Does Peter know the truth about his father? Again, we wouldn't have seen it in the second one, but it was set up for the third one and we never got to see it. So that would have been something, like you said, to explore with that character, definitely.
Yeah. And you know, Chris, my son sent me, and I don't know if this is from the first one or the second one, but there is a deleted scene where Peter's dad turns up at the grave. And then there's all, you know, interaction, and then Peter's bawling his eyes out. He's like, you're supposed to be dead, kind of thing. And so I think it was from this one. But again, it's like, you know, when you get the end of like Usual Suspects, and you get there and like you find out who fucking Kaiser Soze was, and like everything you believed beforehand, you know, was different, and there was this whole ruse, and you're like, holy shit, you know, and it really impacts you, doesn't it? And with this, it's like, oh, does Peter know the secret of his parents? And it's like, I don't care. I just don't care at all, like, what the mystery of his parents is. And so I don't know if they felt like people were going to be like, oh, we've got to watch the second one now. Because that's what a lot of the mid-credit scenes are, isn't it? It's like, oh, I wonder what this particular mystery is. But I remember thinking at the time, it's like, I just don't care about that. It's like, I want to find out about Peter, you know, his kind of relationships with the people closest to him, like Aunt May, like Mary Jane or Gwen or what have you. And I just think, like, didn't care about it, didn't care to see the sequel when it came out. You know, again, the timing on this isn't bad, is it, Chris? Because when this comes out, it's going to be the first day that Venom comes out in the UK.
Yeah.
I know it's already been out for a couple of weeks in the US. And obviously later on this year, we're going to get the No Way Home Spider-Man.
Can't wait for that.
And the rumours are that, you know, Tobey Maguire's going to be in there, Andrew Garfield's going to be in there. And I did see a meme, which was Andrew Garfield, someone saying to him, like, Gwen Stacy's alive in Tobey Maguire's universe, and she's fucking hot. Because it's Bree Dallas Howard, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And she's stunning, Dave. Stunning. Absolutely. I've got a bit of a crush on her, I've got to admit. Jurassic Park did it for me. Amazing. So, Dave, shall we get into our review scores?
Let's go.
Dave, I'll go first on this one. I can only apologise. I thought, to anybody listening, I thought it'd be me and you going at it, really, like, I'd be like defending it and you'd be like, come on, Chris, it's fucking nonsense. And we'd be doing the proper heel and face, you know, battle. It wasn't. We were pretty much in sync with this. There's some great set pieces. Like I say, there's loads of YouTubeable bits that I really, really enjoy. I think Tom McGuire is great as Peter Parker. Good as Spider-Man, it's just, he is 27 when this came out, Dave. That's a bit of a fucking stretch for me. So I've been debating, thinking, is it as, not as bad, but is it just let down as I think? So I think I'm going to squeeze it right in the middle in Hall of Justice, Dave. Just, I was going to send it to Hell's Kitchen, but I think he's still good as Peter Parker. And some of the stuff we've talked about and that, I enjoy it. I just felt it was a little bit boring this time. So, yeah, right in the middle, Dave, but almost in Hell's Kitchen. So, what about yourself?
I think coming into this, I was thinking about Hall of Justice. Because I don't hate it. But I just think this movie is so forgettable. I do think you could watch it in good kind of YouTube format. You know, you could watch the fight with the lizard, say, you know, and that'd be good. The bit with the cranes is pretty good as well. But I think they could have done more as well with the musical score there. I feel like that should have been, you know when you get a John Williams score or something like that and you get something that's going to fill your heart, you know, like a Star Wars theme or something like that, or the Superman theme, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's happening. It is going down. You know, and there was just none of that. So I feel like the score let down that particular scene. But yeah, I do feel like it's not a terrible movie, but I am kind of grading on a curve a little bit. This movie cost $200 million, and it's got some great talent in it as well. So I do like Andrew Garfield. I think he's really good. Emma Stone, isn't she an award-winning? And she got an Oscar and stuff now?
Yeah, yeah.
She's really, really good. And I think individually and actually together with their chemistry and stuff, I think they're really good. But just the overall story, I think it feels lazy. And I struggled to get through it, to be honest. And like I say, I fell asleep for a bit. But I'd seen it a couple of times before. But it just didn't grab me at all. No. And so, yeah, I'm afraid it is a Hell's Kitchen for me. I don't think it's terrible. It's just very, very disappointing.
Good one, Dave. I think, like you say, we're not far off there. I was umming and ahhing myself. But good to be back in the seat, Dave. Comics in Motion, our baby, our original baby. It's always good doing the reviews. So, no, I've really, really enjoyed this. And thanks for indulging me on this one. And big thanks to everyone listening, guys. You know, we really appreciate all the guys on the Comics in Motion feed. We've got so many great shows, so many great people in the Comics in Motion family. Please get onto it and investigate. There's got to be something for you. If you're listening to us, then there's going to be more comic book stuff that you're into. That's on all podcast catching apps. And if you want to email us, comicsinmotionpodcast@gmail.com, or if you want to follow us on social media, @comicsinmotionp. So really, really good, mate. And it's been a great one to go back on and very accessible for everybody who's, you know, listening to this. If you've got Netflix, there's no excuses. Give it a watch and see what you think.
Yep. No, very good. Now, Chris, for our next movie, obviously we've taken a few weeks off and we'll be back kind of every other week on average. But I'm going to speculate, because at the moment I don't know when we're going to be able to record it. But I think we're going to be able to get in our next review on the 29th of October. So 2 days before Halloween. And I'm thinking that what we do for that is The Crow.
No excuses for me, Dave, because I'm actually on Tony's Indie Comic Spotlight on our feed as well, reviewing the comics.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Perfect segue.
So you are actually going to read the comic. You'll be talking to Tony about it.
Yeah.
And so
sure,
I think, well,
Dave. You know, so he said you're actually going to read like I can't read.
No, I don't read it like
that. No, you don't. But
just like actually read the comic.
I'm so lazy out with these comics. I don't read fuck all. I'm such a bum. I, like, you guys, all our comics emotion family are so into reading them and everything. And I'm like, I'm just sat here in the corner playing my computer games and stuff, Dave. So brilliant.
No, but I think the you'll have a different perspective, obviously, going through the source material as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've just done, on the VHS Strikes Back, we've just done Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, haven't we? Brought out in 93, same year as The Crow, and unfortunately, you know, Brandon Lee lost his life on this one. So, you know, really iconic movie, and I just think it's kind of apt coming into Halloween weekend.
Yeah, perfect, Dave, perfect, and I cannot wait. So, Dave, you've done it again. What are you going to take us out with, my friend?
Well, I have nothing for you, sir. So, all I'll say is thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, and I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Excuse me, I'm Eric Lentra.
Tim's Xavier.
Go fuck yourself.
What in the...
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it.
Let's not stand on ceremony here, Mr. Wayne.
Would you care to step outside?
Come to me, son of Jor-El! Kneel before Zod!
Why so serious? Let's put a smile on that face.
I am Iron Man.
I'm Batman.
And me.
Whoa!
Hey.